Well, last week we were looking at some of the things that talked about why temperance or self-control was essential. And just to catch up, you know, we've all had a busy week, and just to kind of get our minds back into it, you know, this word temperance is not one that we use a lot today, unless we're talking about temper or maybe our temperament about something. But it basically, you know, as the idea, it means self-control. And though this study, we've referenced self-control several times, we're looking specifically at how that element is infused in lots of different parts of our lives and how it looks practically day to day. And so we started talking about why it's essential and where it's essential. And then today, we're going to move on. We're going to just touch on a couple we didn't get to last week. And then we're going to move on to a couple places where it's needed. And that'll be our time this morning. It's going to take the time we have to be able to just go through some of those. We won't be able to get to every one that's listed there, because I think there's hopefully a lot of good discussion that goes with it. So we left off last time just talking about this passage in Titus, about that temperance is essential in purity. And that's probably not something that we often think about, that I need self-control in the idea of being pure. But look at what it means in this sense when you read in Titus here. It says, "For the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation for all people, training us to renounce ungodliness and worldly passions, and to live self-controlled, upright, and godly lives in the present age, waiting for a blessed hope and the appearing of the glory of our great God and Savior, Jesus Christ." So when we think about the idea of that we need self-control, or that it is essential in purity, notice what Paul writes to Titus here when he tells them, this is the kind of people that you ought to be, those who are renouncing ungodliness and worldly passions. And if you go back through the ages, it's interesting to read writings of different philosophers, or we might today call them social commentators, in how they talked about how the worldly passions or some of the lustful things of the world were affecting their society. There's a famous quote from Plato that I didn't bring with me, but he goes on for a paragraph or so talking about how the children are, you know, no longer listening to their parents, how morality has declined, and several things that, as you read the paragraph, if you didn't know who wrote it, you would think it's somebody today talking about what's happening, but it wasn't. It was 2,000 years ago, same things. So this was written roughly 2,000 years ago, if we're rounding. So when you think about what Paul is writing here, renouncing ungodliness and worldly passions to live self-controlled, upright, and godly lives in the present age. That's very practical advice. But notice what he says before that. He says that the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation for all people, training us to do this, to renounce these things. So that's my first question. When you think about it, how do you train to be greater at self-control? If that's what's needed to be able to live godly lives, and that's what's needed to be able to then to have this idea of purity, how do you train for that? That's what I'm interested to hear, what you think about it. So that's not the easy question to start with this morning, but Josh is going to take it. Go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is a wonderful place to start to think about. You know, if you want to be able to get yourself in the right mindset and to train self-control, the Bible tells us very clearly that's one of the first places to go. Those who have experience, those who have done these things, what do they say? How can they help? How can they advise? A couple other ones here. Kevin, and we'll work our way around. Right. Exactly. It's obvious as you read through this that there are specific things that require action.
But back to the first beatitude, mm-hmm. The word spirit, for yourself is compared to God.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to think about. We'll talk about that here in a little bit when we think about pride and how self-control affects us there. Steve, do you have something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, in training in anything, mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
You're going to have to walk through it. You're going to have to analyze it.
Right.
What was I doing before this all happened? Things of that nature.
Okay, I think that's a good point. Not give up at the first time you fail, right? Training is something that you do repeatedly over and over in order to for it to become the second nature of the thing that you consistently do. So I think that's a good thing to think about as well, too. Yeah, Paul, go ahead.
People that you can look up to, you know, for different things. But we all had the opportunity to go back into God's Word.
Sure.
You know, when I think of something like this, I think of James chapter 1.
Okay.
When it says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials at various times, in that trial, for you know that the test in your faith now is going to produce steadfastness.
Yeah. Right. And so think of some of the things that we're hearing here, thinking about, those who have experience, that those can help with us, being consistent about it, realizing there's going to be failures, trials are going to help us be strengthened through those things. So start putting all of this together and you kind of see where this is going. Dodd, then Alan. Go ahead. Yeah. Right, kind of the accountability idea, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I think that's good advice. Alan, did you have something? Sure. Okay, yeah. Ultimately. Right, and so I'll add, a couple of my thoughts in with that and kind of put it all together here. So we've had a lot of great discussion with it. On top of that, how you start each day is gonna have to do with it. I think that's a good point. So, do you start each day with the Word of God, or do you start hitting the ground confused, concerned, worked up about what it is that needs done that's in front of you? And so that's one of the things that I think if you want to train yourself in self-control, you're gonna have to start each day. The right way. I'm guilty of not doing that, so I think all of us can do better at that. And that's one thing to think about when you want to appreciate where this is going to go and how this is going to help. A couple more and then we'll move on. Merritt? Yes.
How you start, so that when you want to pick up, you want to build a discipline in small things first.
Right.
Or you
never right.
make it to your goal.
Yeah.
It's very, be faithful in the little things first. Just, what did I do when I woke up? Am I able to not eat that or do that? Just little things
right.
first.
Yeah, that's how you grow and how you build on things. Yeah, Chris, you have something? Okay.
One thing we talk about, being patient with others, is very important, but sometimes we have to be patient with ourselves too. We can get frustrated with ourselves, and, I can't believe I did that. I can't believe I didn't do that. Sometimes when you don't have a good attitude with yourself, then it makes it hard for you to actually do better later.
Sure.
Be patient, yes, I'm not going to get it right away. I'm going to fail a couple of times, but I'll get there eventually, and just got to keep trying.
Okay, yeah, that in and of itself is some self-control there of your mindset. Not running away with the thoughts of I can't do this or I can't complete this. So lots of great things. And there's more we could probably talk about with it. But let's, understand that the idea of temperance affects and is essential in so many different parts of life. Last one that we didn't get to last time was talked about, the writer talked about in having a happy marriage, that self-control is necessary. And that may not be the first thing that we think of when we're talking about marriage, but understand what it is that that helps with that. And he went on in a paragraph here to talk about it, to have harmony in the home, and that that those who lack self-control are going to have issues with that. And he makes a comment here that I've heard him say before, and Mark 8, the writer does, that he came across a book that talked about various marriage problems, and at the bottom of each page, I think is the way he put it, or on every page, the solution to it, besides some advice that was given, the first solution was Mark 8:34, which is the one that we looked at the beginning of this class, which says that everyone who wants to follow after Jesus needs to deny himself, take up his cross, and follow him. And he talks about that's the first answer in marriage difficulties, is for each person to be able to do that, to deny themselves. And so when you think about, you know, how does self-control bring happiness in marriage? Any quick thoughts on that? Yeah, Josh. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. You're right. You can look at several different parts of the relationship and how that comes to play. And here's what I did. I put this verse on here because it speaks to both parties in the marriage. You want to talk about self-control, we'll just sum it up here, since this isn't a marriage class. It says, he's talking about husbands at the first of it, let each one of you love his wife as himself. And for the wife, see that she respects her husband. If both people are willing to do that in the marriage, that takes self-control, doesn't it? To love the other as yourself. To be self-controlled in the fact that you're willing to control, you know, everything else that you're going to do, the passions that you may have, the things that you're going to, that you want to do for yourself, to do that for the other person, that takes control, doesn't it? And on the other side as well, the wife respecting her husband and taking care of him in the way that, of what the Bible means, you know, about that. And again, we don't have time to go into all of that, but those things show us how both people have a part in that relationship and how self-control helps it to be something that's peaceful. Ruby, go ahead. Mm-hmm. 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 Right. Yeah. Yeah. In case you guys didn't hear that, I think that's good advice. I'm going to repeat it because it didn't come from me. It came from somebody more experienced than me. The idea of, you know, being able to stop talking, to shut your mouth, and to listen to what the other person is saying. I'm just going to add to it that, you know, you stop talking, have self-control to stop talking and listen to what they're saying instead of just waiting to respond. Sometimes that's what happens, is we're just waiting to respond and not really listening. So a lot of self-control goes into that, to be able to do that. And it's a hard thing to do sometimes, isn't it? A couple quick ones. And yeah, Alan? Removing TVs can't hurt. That's what I think. Hard to do. In today's day, because it's become an integral part of our culture. In fact, we've moved beyond TVs. You don't need the TV anymore. You have devices. You know, I have one on me. There's one right here. There's one behind us. You know, those are everywhere. So yeah, I mean, those can distract from, focusing on one another, and it takes self-control to turn those off. Put down the phone, say, hey, you know what? When I get home, I'm turning this off. I'm not going to turn it back on until tomorrow. We're not going to turn the TV on tonight. We're going to focus on something else. Yeah. That's self-control. That's hard, but that's beneficial to a relationship, isn't it? Very good. Well, in just moving through some of the other things, the other thoughts that we see in the other part of this lesson, he talks about where it's needed. And some of these we've touched on in what we've already discussed. So let's just think about a few of them together here in the time we have left. Talking about self-control, where temperance needed in our temper. And these couple of verses I like here in Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 17, a man of quick temper acts foolishly, and a man of evil devices is hated. And the Proverbs 16:32, whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. You think about that for a minute. You know, when we look at those who are in positions of authority, you know, you think about a governor or a mayor or a president who's in charge of lots of different things, and you think about sometimes what it takes to be that kind of person, to be a leader of that capacity, especially depending on the size of the city or what it is that you're ruling over. It takes a lot of things to be able to hold that together, doesn't it? And we look at people who are able to do that with some respect. The proverb writer says, whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty. Whoever can control his spirit is better than the one who even has the wherewithal to rule a city. And I think that was interesting to look at. Proverbs 25 and 28, which I didn't put up there, it was in the lesson, talks about a man without self-control is like a city broken and left without walls. So someone who has lost their self-control, someone who is just open and ripe for anything to happen. So that's interesting when you consider it. So why do you think temper is so hard to control? Talking about self-control, and some things are easier than others, I would say. Why is temper so hard? What do you think? Yes, Seth? Okay. Yep. And so if we don't think we don't have a problem, first of all, then yeah, that's going to be part of it if we're not going to work on it, Jake.
Action that's supposed to happen, that's our decision making, our impulse control, all that stuff, it starts inhibiting that. So whatever that's worth, there's just an actual reaction in our brain when we get worked up and angry that we put ourselves in a place where it's hard for us to think about the right and wrong. It's hard for us to control our actions. None of us can, just think
right.
About our, so maybe we'll try to not be angry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Yeah, yeah, and I think that's the point. There's a study. I don't have all the details, and we don't have time to go into it, but the quick overview is the study was, and I don't remember the name of the part of the brain. Some of you medical people can help me out. But there's about a five-second delay between when this initial part of the brain engages and the neocortex engages. The neocortex is what's going to help you think and reason through things. Like Jake was talking about, I think I'm not going to say it because I'm going to say it wrong. It starts with an A, I'll put it that way. It's the tiny part of the brain that is your initial reaction. If somebody comes up and smacks you in the face and your first reaction is to smack them right back, somebody comes up and is going to punch you and your reaction is to do this, or somebody cuts you off on the road and your first reaction is to make a gesture, to yell something, there's that 5-second delay. And that's when this little part of the brain engages immediately. You know, evolutionists will tell you it's your fight or flight response versus the neocortex. So there's an actual physiological thing that involves our temper that we need to recognize, first of all. And as Jake said, if you can recognize that and learn to control that, you know, you've taken a step ahead of a lot of people. And the Bible points out that, you know, the man who's able to do that is headed in the right direction as far as God's concerned. Quick comments? Yeah, Chris? Yeah.
Not taking a step back and looking to the other side.
Sure.
We don't always know why someone cut us off. A lot of times it's they had no right. But every once in a while it could be there was a reason why they did.
That's right.
We don't know that. And maybe try to think of other stuff, the other perspectives that are always going to get our way.
Yes, we'll use the driving example, and you know, that's something that I wrestle with, and my very optimistic daughter, I won't tell you which one, said to me, "You never know, Dad, maybe they're on their way to the hospital." So, you know, you don't know sometimes, right? Right, Alan? Takes a little longer, yeah. Good things to, so develop self-control while you're young so you can span that extra 5 seconds, right? Right? Good point, Rich. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's true. There you go.
And
yeah.
The thing is, people will tell you, you know, this if God's done now, this piece is so pressing, or, you know, I'm going to do this to you if you don't do this, or, you know, all these certain things. Well, you know, if you're in trouble for this or that, nobody can do anything to you. God's the only one who can really do anything to you that matters.
Right. If you're going to have, if you have control of yourself, control of your mind, you recognize that. One thing that you said, people try to push your buttons. Yes, there's external circumstances, and sometimes people purposefully try to get you to lose your temper, right? And think about the verse, I guess I forgot, it's not up there, 25:28, Proverbs 25:28. The man without self-control is like a city broken and left without walls. If you let somebody push your buttons, you have just opened yourself up to no protection, right? But if you have self-control, you're keeping that stuff out, and you're able to focus on what you need to focus on. Important to think about. Let's move through a couple other ones here. Needed in our pride. Paul says in Romans chapter 12 and verse 3, he says, "For by grace given to me, I say to everyone among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith God has assigned him." So how we think about ourselves, we don't often put self-control into that realm sometimes, but we need to. You know, is it wrong to be proud of things or to be proud of yourself in certain ways? Nobody wants to answer that one. Oh, wow, all at once. Cheryl, go ahead. Yep, that's true. I agree. Yeah. So thinking about that, Merritt, what were you going to say? Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. And that's where I think, you know, I'm moving faster now because the time is ticking away. You know, the second question, how does self-control keep us from crossing the line into sinful behavior with pride? Well, what Merritt said, I think, is a good way to look at that. That we're keeping in mind that we're doing things for the glory of God, we're thinking about what's important, and that our accomplishments, the things that we're able to accomplish many times, most times, are because of abilities he's given us or because he's allowed us to do something. So keeping that in mind, I think, is one way to keep that in check. Rich, do you have something real quick? Okay.
It's almost like, you know, Martin Luther King, the street sweeper, that whole thing, you know, do the job, if you're doing it for Jesus himself,
mm-hmm.
you know, and try to be like that, but do it, not just to puff yourself up and be seen as
okay,
that.
Yeah.
Just do it just because God has seen fit to give you that talent, will you?
That's right. That's the best attitude that you can have with it, is to understand that the talents, the abilities, the accomplishments, whatever it is, whatever words you want to put in there that we have, come from things that God has done for us. And if we recognize things that way, go back to meekness that we talked about for several weeks, then yes, we can be good at something. We can have strength under control in things. We can accomplish much for the work of the kingdom where we start to get out of accomplishing much for God is when we start to think, as Paul says, of ourselves more highly than we ought to think, instead of remembering that what we're doing is for his glory and for his purpose. I think that's a good way to look at it. I skipped the one about our words in the lesson because it talks about James 3 and controlling our tongue, and Josh did a great job covering that when we studied James 3, and we talked about, you know, the things that go along with that and how we need to be controlled in that way. What about our thoughts, though? That's one of the next ones that he talks about here, that we need to control our thoughts. 2 Corinthians 10:5, we destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God. You know, Paul's talking about something else here in context, but the principle is here at the end of that where he says, and take every thought into captive to obey Christ. So, thinking about you and I now, we understand about we need to be self-controlled in what we say, and maybe in our pride, as we've talked about, or in some of the things that we're doing, and how to train for that. We've discussed that, but what about the thought thing? You know, here's another one in 2 Timothy 2 and verse 22, where, you know, Paul says, flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace among those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. So this is the idea of what we think and being able to have that under control. So which is harder to control, what you say or what you think? Or are they the same? I don't know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I got a text which made me want to automatically respond. If I can respond, okay?
Sure.
And so I was typing so fast, I'm like, I didn't know I could catch that. But I was texting my response. And when I got to a point, I stopped. And I'm like, no, you're not going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
However, it stayed on my mind that day, that night,
sure,
the next day, the next night. And so by the next afternoon, I had to go into prayer and ask the Lord,
yeah,
to remove that from my mind.
Right. Look for some help.
So heavy, so your thoughts can destroy your body as well. But the Lord did that in really that space. I love the way he works.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And last night I was cleaning off my desk and I had written down some stuff. And it was only when I looked at what I had written down that I realized that he had removed that from my thoughts.
Sure. So you see the idea of prayer and taking things to God, laying burdens on him, and focusing on the right things is what helps us deal with those different situations. Any other thoughts? You know, easier to control what you say or think. Seth?
Go back to the response in the car so they cut you off.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Elaine?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's right. So let's kind of just say, if we bundle this one up a little bit, you know, sometimes it is easier. We think it's easier to control what we say than what we think. But I encourage you to go back and don't treat the symptom, treat the problem. It starts with what's in our heart. It starts if we're willing to be self-controlled people. Because what we put into our heart and the kind of people that we are and what kind of heart we have is going to determine then what we think. And then what we think is going to control what we say. What we say controls what we do. What we do forms habits, and those habits become our character. You've heard me say this before. It's a chain, right? So self-control at its core, in our thoughts, keep us from saying, then doing, then becoming things that are not glorifying to God. And that's what we want to remember. The last one I had on the screen was reactions. There's a few more in the lesson for you to look at. You know, it talks about Christ, that when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. And just, there's a question to think about. We're out of time now, but, you know, how would you advise someone to learn to control their reactions? I'll submit to you that has to do with what we just said. Starts at the heart, starts at when you're willing to control yourself and your thoughts, and goes from there. So thanks for your participation today. Great class. Lesson 11 for next week, please. Thank you.